Today's episode of Expanded Perspectives is sponsored by Gaia.com. Help find your own truth by exploring perspectives you won't find in the mainstream on some of life's biggest mysteries. Whether it's grand conspiracies, breakaway societies, UFOs, ancient civilizations, lost wisdom, as well as the paranormal, all at your fingertips. Stream videos anywhere from your living room or on the go with access to over 7,000 titles, all available to you with a monthly plan for only $9.95 a month. If you sign up now, the first month is only 99 cents. And there are multiple plans to choose from, including a three-month plan and an annual plan. If you enjoy expanding your perspective, then you'll enjoy Gaia.com. Gaia.com. That's GAIA.com/EP. Let's start the show.
There again, everybody, and thank you so much for joining us here today on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, and of course, sitting in the room with me, as always, the Parker County Paralyzer, Weatherford's Finest here, the Dubtown Demon, the man himself, Filio Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? I'm super excited to be here today. I'm pumped. I don't know why. I woke up this morning with a lot of energy. The fights were pretty good last night. There was also some disappointments. Apparently, whenever you have an MMA fight in New York, they always seem to mess it up somehow.
Here we go.
I don't know. I just feel really good today. So I'm. I don't know. My chi is focused.
Is your chi flowing? Your chakras are aligned, my friend.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about, dude. I feel great. I just got back from playing a little disc golf. I just sat down in here. I just cracked open a nice cool adult drink, got a bottle of water. We're going to be talking about some wild and wacky things. We had a wonderful weekend. So glad to get to talk to you guys, man. I tell you what, I love doing this. We always talk about it. I love getting to just share things with y'all and getting messages and stuff sent back and forth, and I'm trying to get through to them. Look, we're trying to get y'all, been bombarding, especially messages on Facebook, so if it's taking a while, bear with me. I wasn't expecting that, to get all these stuff, so you know, we're going to work through all that stuff. Before we go any further, we're not going to be in Arkansas.
Yeah.
We had something pop up. It's a good thing and a bad thing. Look, it's a bad thing because this just happened all of a sudden, and we really wanted to be there, and me and Kyle was really looking forward to it. But we have a bit of a business
opportunity.
Yeah, like a business thing working out, and we had no plans on this, and it's going to be going on in Austin, and we have to go down there. So we're actually some big change stuff, and we're taking our wives, and we're got to roll down to Austin this exact same weekend. It's one of those deals where we can't postpone. So for everybody that we were going to get to see there, we are truly sorry, and maybe we'll hook up some other time at another one, something, I don't know. But yeah, we're not going to be able to make it, man.
But when we're in Austin, we're going to do something cool after our business deal is over.
Yeah, we are going to have a little fun down there. Y'all remember, of course y'all remember. Y'all have been with us forever. When I had talked about when I went down there and floated in the Zero Gravity Institute in the deprivation tank. Well, I'm taking Kyle and Mrs. Filson, and we're going to go down there, and I'm taking Miss Hale with us, and we're all going to go And, of course, my wife and I have floated. We're going to take Kyle and his lovely bride, and they're going to go ahead and get theirs out of the way, their first one done, and we're all going to go float. So it's going
to be fun. I'm looking forward to it, man. I've been reading a ton about it.
Right.
Looking forward. I'm hoping to see machine elves or something like that.
Well, here's what I propose that we do while we're down there is, for sure, not only float. Also, we're going to swing by and try to see if we can talk to Aubrey there and on it, see if we can catch up with him. But we may need to chat it up with Kevin, the man that owns Zero Gravity Institute. And like I said last time, we didn't do it. I'd like to get him on one time to just at least talk about some of it and talk about the benefits of it. Because if it's in your town, folks, or near you, I suggest you go do it. But that's all I'm going to talk about right now, because we'll cover it again on next Monday show when we get back, because I want this Yahoo to explain how much fun he's had, too.
I'm looking forward to it. Well, let's get into the news. Check this out. This is a new article over at New Scientist, and it claims that an Earth-sized planet orbiting a dim star 39 light years away has a hazy atmosphere that could indicate the presence of a water world. One of the first times astronomers have been able to detect an atmosphere surrounding a small rocky planet. The article goes on to talk about how similar observations using the next generation of powerful telescopes could be used to look for life outside of our solar system. Until now, Cam, scientists have mostly been able to spot the atmosphere of giant, hot Jupiter exoplanets and very unlikely to support life. The super Earth planet, also known as GJ1132b, was observed as it passed in front of a cool red dwarf star, blocking out some of the star's light. And by measuring this slight drop in the star's brightness, astronomers were able to work out that the planet was 1.4 times the size of Earth. They also found that in one light wavelength band, the planet looked slightly bigger. This could be explained by an atmosphere that was opaque to some light wavelengths, but transparent to others. Now, the detection of an atmosphere around GJ1132b marks the first time that an atmosphere has been detected around a planet less than twice the size of Earth. Previously, he said, we had seen waterless atmospheres around planet 55 Cancri E, which is between 6 and 8 times Earth's mass, but this time it was something different. They said a team simulated a range of possible atmospheres for the planet, and finding that those rich in water and or methane would explain the observations. The planet is significantly hotter and a bit larger than Earth. So that goes on to talk about how one possibility is that it could be a water world with an atmosphere of hot steam. They said by analyzing the chemical composition of exoplanet atmospheres could in future yield tales of signs of life. They said another example to detect is perhaps the presence of ozone. They said if you can detect if there's any ozone, that means that most likely it's being generated by plants. They said also methane is another, but this can also be generated by volcanic activity. Now, a woman named Sarah Seeger at the MIT, or Massachusetts Institute of Technology, has compiled a list of 14,000 different molecules that could provide biosignatures of life on alien worlds. They said NASA's planned James Webb Telescope, due to launch next year, as a successor to the Hubble Space Telescope, will be powerful enough to begin studying the atmospheres of Earth-like atmosphere. So that's pretty cool. I'm going to have to talk to our friend Chris Penny over there at MIT.
Yeah, right, for sure.
See if he knows who Sarah is. That's not a joke, folks. A guy that me and Cam actually went to high school with actually is going to school at MIT.
We were just hanging out with him about 3 weeks ago drinking beer. Now, literally, it's one of those things like you're really good friends that you've really partied hard with back in your high school days. If you can imagine somebody like that, and I mean like partied hard, and then that person goes to MIT, it's a little weird. So you're like, wait, you did what? Come on, man.
I feel very inferior when I'm standing next to him.
I don't, because I still think he's a screw up. Just because he goes to school there doesn't tell me a thing. But yeah, we're going to have to, you know what? All jokes aside, we'll have to hit him up.
That's pretty cool, though, man, right? That there's these other planets and they're able to... Man, when they start talking about the process of how they can do that and determine the size...
I don't understand it, man.
...and the atmosphere, I wish I knew.
Look, but you know what? There's a whole lot I don't understand.
Exactly.
There's a whole lot.
Very cool, though, man.
I'm not even sure how this stuff here we're using works. I got something here, folks. I'm going to touch on something I haven't touched on in a long time. I dug this out of a website I don't normally go to. This comes from Cryptozoology News. This is a Texas man releases a UFO video.
I still think Cam owns Cryptozoology News. Seriously. I don't think you're telling me the whole story.
I'm maybe pulling your leg a skosh. Y'all can go there and watch this video. It's on YouTube. I'll tell you this. He took it with his phone, It's extremely interesting. I mean, it's an extremely interesting video because the light on this video does seem to be moving at rather high speeds, you know, faster than you think it would. But it says here that a man in Texas released footage on this past Sunday containing an unidentified flying object. This comes up from San Antonio. It says this anonymous man, of course, says that he was driving to his local grocery store there in San Antonio last Wednesday at about 8:30 p.m. when he noticed this anomaly. He says that it caught my attention because it was so large and bright. And he goes on to add that the UFO began moving slowly, and he drove to the other side of the store to park and take a video of it, like I said, using his phone. It says here that the one-minute footage shows a stationary white light turning into a smaller red and green blinking color. The UFO then begins flying quickly to the right side of the screen, coming to a complete stop, and finally descending to the ground, and that's where it disappears, folks. And this is what he says. I was floored by what I saw. I felt like I was crazy for standing by my van videoing this when nobody else around me seemed to notice it at all. If it weren't for the video evidence, I would think I was. Now, like I said, I've watched this video. It's an extremely interesting video. The first thing that pops into my mind, though, is a drone.
That's exactly what I think.
You're right.
Because I'm watching it.
Yes.
And for one thing, it looks like it has a blinking navigation light.
Look how
on
fast it moves. And I know this is probably me wanting to see this, but it almost seems like when it shoots from left to right, that you can see the, I don't know if you would call it a camber or the cant, but like if you gassed like on a chopper, It takes a different line. Instead of it being where the skids are perfectly level, they angle a little bit where the chopper noses down as it drives into the headwind to move forward. It almost looks like that with that drone. Is it's almost like, or whatever that light is what it is. Looks like it almost kicks up on, like, I'm going to use a term from disc golf, as an Anheuser line, as it, or I guess it would more be like a Heiser line, but it picks up at an angle cutting and goes across. And I can't tell if I'm seeing that or if I want to see that.
I know what you're saying. I'm looking at it too, and I just watched it for the first time ever. And to me, it's all based on scale. If you think that that's a super far away object, then yeah, it looks like that thing's moving thousands of miles an hour. In reality, if that thing is 100 yards away, most drones will go 45, 50 miles an hour.
Well, that's why when you're looking at like at a baseball game,
mm-hmm.
the ball doesn't look like it's moving very far. When you're sitting way back up in the back and they hit one to the outfield, you're like, it's just barely taking its time to get out there. Whereas if you're the catcher, the ball is whipping as it goes out through there because, like you said, it's the perspective of things.
Right. So I think, I mean, I don't know.
I don't know what it
we
is.
We talk about it all
saying
the time, several times that, you know, UFOs probably put blinking lights just to blend in.
Yes.
But to me, it looks like a drone.
That's the only thing I could think of is maybe, and he's talking about not being able to hear. You know, he doesn't say that, but he never points out that you could hear. And on the video, you can't hear it, of course. That's something else, is that if it was, you know, 500,000 yards away and you saw this, and I don't know how big it is. Maybe somebody's out there messing around. I don't know. That's just something that it could be. But it is a very interesting video, nonetheless.
It is.
The way it moves.
And I'm guilty of it, too. This happened to me literally like 5 days ago. I was outside. The boys were at baseball practice. So mm-hmm. I was, you know, I wasn't participating. They had already had, they were doing some kind of drill, but they didn't need me. So I was just, you know, bebopping around.
Typical.
Hanging out in the park. Yeah, like normal. And for a moment, I saw this white object, and it was doing some really weird things, and I had to stop and watch it for just a second, and then I realized it's a drone.
But for
about 10 seconds, I was like, what is that?
Right.
That looks weird. There's somebody flying a drone, one of those DJI, you know, Phantoms.
Yeah.
The white ones. That's all it was. So I could, at night, it's even worse.
I could only imagine it with the lights on it, because I'm sure they have to have lights on and things like that.
Yeah, I don't know the rules, but I bet you they do.
But you'd also want to be able to see it. You wouldn't want to fly it in the night. Anyway, I'm imagining that, like we've discussed in the past, I think a lot more of this is going to happen.
I do, too.
I think there'll be a lot more wild sightings.
Well, speaking of things that hover, I've talked about this before when this guy was testing this thing out. Do you remember a guy I did a story on named Frankie Zapata? He's this French inventor who has this hoverboard. Remember, he was flying it over the water?
Yes.
Well, now he's flown it over the Atlantic Ocean.
What?
Not the whole ocean.
No.
There's a futuristic video that's just emerged of a man flying on a hoverboard across a portion of the Atlantic Ocean, and it's Frankie Zapata. He's the chief executive of Zapata Racing, and he's in this video, he's whizzing over the sea off the coast of France on a hoverboard that is available for the public to hire. Now, Mr. Zapata is riding the record-breaking Flyboard Air.
Wait. And I know you may not know the answer to this. The public can hire it?
Yep, you can rent this thing.
Okay. All right. Continue, sir.
Now, this thing has previously hit the headlines for traveling more than 34 miles an hour, and I've talked about it before. He managed to travel this time 50 meters above the surface of the Atlantic Ocean for just under 7 minutes in the most recent flight. Now, this Flyboard Air is a jet-powered board with four turbo engines, or an independent propulsion unit that propels it upwards and forwards when traveling over land and sea. It stabilizes itself in a similar way to a drone, and get this, Cam, can reach heights up to 10,000 feet.
No thanks.
And speeds of 92.3 miles per hour.
On a hoverboard.
On a hoverboard.
That sounds safe.
This board can fly for around 10 minutes before it runs out of power, I guess.
I want to use my hoverboard to get to 10,000 feet and run in 90 before I realize I've got 9 minutes and 45 seconds of energy I've already used up.
Right.
That's when you're like, oh, well, I'm going to get to the bottom of this real quick.
Right. Now, they say previous versions of the Flyboard, which are on sale, use water propulsion to lift them and can only be used on lakes. Now, I've actually seen one of these at the Possum Kingdom one time. It's like a jetpack.
The dude will do flips with
it. This isn't like a backpack. This is the thing. You're standing on it, and it's got like jet turbines in it.
The board carries its own weight.
It's crazy. Yeah. It says they're available for between 1,500 pounds to 9,600 pounds. And it says while the Flyboard Air isn't currently on sale, it can be rented from locations in the U.S. and the United Kingdom. He says, Mr. Zapata says, since 2016, we have fulfilled people's dreams by giving them the opportunity to move through the air on a totally autonomous flying board. It says people who want to use this Flyboard Air will need to spend 100 hours practicing over water before having to spend another 20 hours learning over land. Now, it said that it has been designed as a method of transport that people could ultimately use to collect their bread in the morning. Pretty cool. I mean, it really is a neat thing. I don't think it's ever going to take off. And, I mean, it looks like it would take more than 100 hours to get proficient enough to use this thing.
Safely.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things.
You can do anything once.
It's really cool, but I don't know if it's ever going to take off. I don't foresee a day where people are going to be flying around on hoverboards to go get bread.
I don't see a day where they're going to use a hoverboard whenever there's skateboards out there now and there's cars.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing to me. It's like, if you're going to have a flying car, why would you want a flying board?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's a neat video. I'll put links to it in the show notes. You can go over there and check it out. But I don't think it's ever going to take off.
Picture Pedro. We'll make all your dreams come true.
Right.
And we've made it come true because we're flying. I've got something here that, as far as dreams come true. And this really is something that I am excited about. We always talk about this. And our brothers over there in Australia, Chris and Waz, that do the Thylacine Research Unit. This is one of those things that it makes me think of them instantly when I saw it. This comes from NationalGeographic.com, folks. An extinct mountain dog is rediscovered in the wild. It was unseen for more than 50 years. It's the New Guinea Highland Wild Dog and has at last been confirmed in its natural island habitat.
Huh.
Yeah. It says scientists are croning over new pictures that confirm the survival of the New Guinea Highland Wild Dog, which up until now was feared to be extinct in its natural habitat in the South Pacific Island. Thought to be among the rarest species of canine, the Highland Wild Dogs are either the same as or close relatives of the famous singing dogs of New Guinea, which exist only in captivity. More than 100 camera trap pictures taken in 2016 show at least 15 wild individuals, including males, females, and pups. Says though they are most commonly a golden color, some of the dogs are cream, ginger, roan, or black and have different markings and patterns. Now, DNA evidence suggests this, that the New Guinea Highland Wild Dog is among the most primitive canines alive today and may be the key ancestor of domesticated dogs. Yeah, that's right. Now, the New Guinea Highland Wild Dog Foundation has on its website this, the discovery and confirmation of the Highland Wild Dog for the first time in over half a century is not only exciting, but an incredible opportunity for science. Mm. Now, previous reports in 2005 and in 2012 suggest the dogs were still living in their Highland homes, but neither was considered to be solid, conclusive evidence. Now, it says that luck came in 2016 when a zoologist named James K. McIntyre led a group of the researchers from this Wild Dog Foundation on an expedition to Papua Province. Papua. And there they come across researchers from the University of course, Papua, or Papua, or whatever you want to do it. Papa. And they were also there eager, and they said they were discovering signs of this dog's existence. And they said that the trip delivered very promising initial evidence. And what they said was a muddy paw print. So they both went to working together, stuck up all these camera traps in all these forests. And they said the forests that they're actually in, get a load of this, Philly, they're above sea level between 11,000 and 14,000 feet. That's a pretty good ways up there for these pups to be living.
Mm-hmm.
Says that those cameras recorded more than 150 images of these dogs in only 2 days on the mountain summit in that area. Now, in addition to this photographic evidence of these dogs, the researchers also, you ready for this, observed them firsthand.
Huh.
They found them and watched them, and they went in there and did, well, Kyle used to do this whenever he was in college, collected scat samples, which will help the scientists, they say, better understand the animal's modern lifestyle and, of course, what they're eating and then their history and how they got to where they are now. Now, I know there's a difference here, and I know people are going to split the hairs, and they were like, yeah, I get what you're saying with the idea of the thylacine, but these guys already knew they were there. You know, they already said they believe that they've been there, but they weren't 100% conclusive on them. It's, yeah, you're right. But what do you think all these sightings are that true right. researches and Waz and Chris go through? Those sightings could be the same thing. There's people out there right now believe that they are there. They just haven't quite got the evidence yet. Maybe there's not the numbers. Maybe they're not in such a concentrated area. Like if you took this whole group and spread them across the United States, there was only 50 of them, say, good luck finding them. Right. You know, the whole deal. So I hold out hope that something like this is going to happen in that area to find the Tasmanian tiger. I'm a big fan of this. Fingers crossed. That's what I got hoping for anyway with that whole deal. And as far as speaking of hoping, I hope y'all stick around after the break because I've got something interesting here that one thing led to another, and you know how we start digging around and stuff. And I found some interesting stories that I had never thought about in a certain way. And we've covered some of this stuff in the past, but this is something that I had never really wrapped my head around in this way. So this is... this is something I think is going to be fun. So when we get back from the break, folks, I'm going to be discussing highway phantoms and vanishing hitchhikers on the other side of this little dumpling. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we are back and going to dig yes. into this. Something crazy. We're going to have a little fun with this whole thing. I got some stuff I wanted to talk about, and then... look, I sat down, I was looking at a few things, I said, I'm going to talk about this and bring this up, and then I stumbled across this story, and then it's one of those deals like your ADD kicks in, and you start chasing it down a rabbit hole, next thing you know, you've spent hours looking at this stuff, you're like, man, this is pretty cool, I want to talk about this instead. And that's kind of what this turned out, because the first thing that struck me was, when I read this one story, and I'll get to that story, was this whole thing about the vanishing hitchhiker. I did not realize that it was such an urban legend, and... as widely used as this tale is, something that I never really thought about before. You know, like we've discussed in the past and we always laugh about is, oh, there's a serial killer or there's somebody loose in the woods and then they, you know, the car drives off and the kissing couple gets scared and drives off. And when they get there, there's bloody handprints on the car or there's like a hook left hooked in the bumper or the door handle, you know, all this. Well, these things are like these urban legends that go around. And I didn't realize that it was so much so. So I was like, well, what's the idea of the vanishing hitchhiker? Well, easy. If you just go to Wikipedia and look at it, it breaks it down. I'll read it for you real quick. It says that the variations of such of the vanishing hitchhiker, like the ghostly hitchhiker, the disappearing hitchhiker, they call them the phantom hitchhikers. It goes through, is urban legend. And it says it's when people traveling by vehicle meet or are accompanied by a hitchhiker who subsequently vanishes without explanation, often, it says here, from a moving vehicle. You go into it, there's a Jan Harold Bavan's book written in 1981 called The Vanishing Hitchhiker. Well, apparently this digs completely into it and traces some of these stories back all the way to the 1870s and says that there's even parallels that take place in Russia, Chinese Americans, Mormons, Ozark Mountaineers, and Korea. So it's like this stuff is from all walks of life. These tales make it. So I'm like, well, wait a second. What if there's some truth to this? You know what I mean? Like we've always yeah. talked about, you always bring up some of these urban legends and these old wives' tales and all these stories that we discuss. Some of them sound fantastical and really out there, but maybe it was spawned from something. Maybe it started out as a normal tale and then it grew, or maybe there really was a tale like this goes down because it would be real easy to dismiss this. So I got to looking into another vanishing hitchhiker story, and it actually one that takes place up in Kentucky. Story goes like this, that there's two young men and they're going to this local dance one evening, right? And so they're picked up along the way. They gather up some attractive young women to go with them. I believe like one young woman that goes with them. And this is actually called the Meshack Road. The story says that she's wearing a very beautiful formal evening gown and they invite her to the dance. Well, being excited, she decides that she's going to go and she's going to dance with both of these fellas. Okay, that's how this thing goes.
Mm-hmm.
Then she's agreed that the boys are going to take her home. But they say that only if she could be let out at a certain spot, is the way this tale says. The story goes that it was raining when they leave the dance, and one of the boys offers to give her the coat of his coat and says that he would pick it up from her later. So they drop this girl off along this Meshack Road on this little tiny house. And a few days later, this boy, knowing where they've dropped her off, goes back to get the coat. This is how the story goes. So he goes up and he says he asked this girl, and there's a woman at the house, and she's asked, you know, hey, I'm trying to find this girl. And she said, well, I did have a daughter, but she died in an accident along this very road. And she tells the boy where she's buried. And he goes to this churchyard there, this courtyard area where she's buried by this church. And the story says that it was there where he found his coat. It was laying neatly beside the grave. So that's a little strange. You get it. It's like, wait a minute. But that even sounds like an old wives' tale, urban legend story, right? Because you and I know stories along these lines, and I'm sure people listening know these stories. There's even another one that goes along that there was a phantom hitchhiker or whatnot connected to that same road. And it says that they would report, get a load of this. This is a little bit different. Some motorcycle riders would travel down this road in the evenings, and they would say that they would get to a certain point, and they would feel like somebody was on them. Like jump on the back of the bike almost, because they could feel arms or something wrapping around them. Like it getting tighter, like something is hanging on. And then they would talk about that it would only be that way for a mile or two, and then it would go away. On this same road there in Kentucky, which I was like, well, that's really odd. You know, what the heck's going on? Then it got to saying that people that would ride horseback on the lands around there, which sounds crazy. Do you talk about Kentucky? You talk about the Kentucky Derby, you know, but the horses, that's in their blood. That's what this is in that area. They report the same thing, not riding down the road, of course, but riding in pastures and things along this same stretch of the highway report the same thing. Is somebody getting on them, grabbing a hold, holding on, something strange, like it always feels like a presence, not a coldness, but the feeling of something physically holding on to them for a small amount of time, a mile or two, a few hundred yards, almost like it's timed out. I'd never even heard of that. I'd never even heard of the fact that something would jump on and jump off of you. But, you know, it goes back into the whole urban legend thing. Now, why you would tell that, I have no idea. I don't know what the benefit would be to saying, you know, if you want to keep your daughter off the roads at night or whatnot, or however it is, because usually that's what it is. It's usually the kids. So after looking into this, I'm like, well, let's see what else I can dig up. Well, I start digging around and I found a place just south of Jamestown, North Carolina. And it's actually, there's a bridge. And this road that this bridge is on is called US 70A, or they call it High Point Road in this area. And it's, I'm sure the listeners, some that live in that area know of this. It's called Lydia, the Phantom Hitchhiker. That's pretty much what they say. So the story says that this, that in this area, the US 70A is a very twisting, curving road. And there's a very old overpass in this area that's overgrown. And multiple drivers in this area have reported seeing a young woman in a white evening dress. Sound familiar? Mm-hmm. Right? Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Standing by the side of the road. But they say she's not going, just standing there like these young boys reported when they picked her up in Kentucky. They say that this woman is trying to flag a car down. So the story goes in this area that when you pull over, that she's a very meek young lady. So she's kind of scared. She's kind of subdued. She's like, thank you so much for stopping and helping me and all this. And she jumps. And most people report, I'm sure it would be different if you just had two doors. But for some reason, they say she likes to get into the back seat. So she wants to sit behind you, strangely enough. And that she tells whoever's picked her up that her name is Lydia. And you're going to like this, Kyle. She tells that she's just been to a dance and she's trying to get home.
Huh.
Now, really strange there that it wads up that way, right? You're like, huh, that's wild. Then she tells whoever's picked her up an address. They say, look, it's just right up here. Would you please take me to my home where I need to be? And, of course, every driver always says, oh, yeah, I'll take it. The drivers report this, that they try to engage in conversation with her like you would. Oh, I'm sorry. What's happened? Is there something else I need to get? Do I need to call the police? Is everything okay? And everyone in the stories that report on this say that she seems to be completely oblivious to them talking. Just kind of like looking out the window, nothing, just concentrating straight ahead is all she's doing. So the driver's like, all right, look, man, we see what's going on. Leave her alone. Story goes in that they pull up in front of this house that this Lydia woman has told them where to take her. And, you know, the driver, one of the stories goes that the driver gets out and opens the door for her. You know, going to be a nice guy. I'm going to step out and open the door. And that when he opens the door, she's not there anymore. All right. That's how one of the drivers. Right. Some of them even say, too, that she gets out. They drive away. And they, you know, kind of like the other ones, they come back and find some other stuff here. But for the part of the meat of this story is it goes into a fella rings the doorbell. Same thing. An old woman answers. He says, hey, I've just picked up a girl and all this. Told me to bring her to the house. She's not here. Starts asking, hey, did she come in? Did I not look? Did she jump out and run? The story says that the old woman's like, oh, okay. And she walks in. This is a bit much, I know. But she goes and she gets a picture that's on a table there by the door. And she turns around and says, is this the picture of the girl that you picked up? And the driver's like, yes, ma'am, that's the picture. You know, that's the woman that I helped. And the old woman tells him, well, that's Lydia, and she was my daughter, and that she died in a wreck on that overpass years and years ago, and you're not the first person to do this. And I'm surprised, you know, as long as I'm alive, you probably won't be the last person. So it goes back into almost the exact same story. I mean, you look at this, different areas, North Carolina, Kentucky, but yet it seems to be going along the urban legend line, timeline of them telling things, right?
Right.
They also, the story says that, you know, she's passing, you know, flagging people down, this, that, and the other. And people stop and they look back and she's not there. They pull past or turn around. She's not even there for that. They're like, well, what the heck did I see? So this tale has been studied and researched and proven time and again to be some sort of urban legend because it all follows the same style from around the country. Yet there are still those that swear they themselves have experienced this very thing and that it's not simply a tale to just to scare friends with when you tell them, but instead something that truly happens to them. Like this, for example, listen here. Same thing in North Carolina. North Carolina Highway 49. It's a very winding road. And it says that this is what it says. It's a two-lane road that curves real low through these little hills. It's between Asheboro and Charlotte, North Carolina. People have reported that, you know, it's not real busy road. And said, as you're driving along, it may be quite some time. We've all been down these roads where you're winding and winding down through there, and you may not see another car for quite some time. The story says this, that this took place back in the 40s. That, and you can only imagine back in the 40s, there would really be nobody on the roads up in there. But it says that there was a family was going home one evening. They had been in Charlotte all day visiting family and gone out to dinner and this, and they're coming back home, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's late one evening. Story says that in the back of the car, the kids are laying in the back seat. They're asleep. The father is just driving with his family, you know, and he's just rolling down through there. Doesn't want to wake anybody up. We've all been those dads driving late at night. Even the moms know you've been a mom driving late at night. You're a parent putting in the work, right? Everything's quiet, calm, windows down. The father, and like I said, this is the tale that gets told. The tale goes forward that the father says that there starts lights coming up behind him, racing up in the rearview mirror. Gets right up on him. Now, the story goes that it's a brand new Ford car, okay?
Right.
Why it's a Ford, I have no idea, but it's a Ford. And he is right on his bumper, legitly right on him, just like inches off of him. And he doesn't care if anybody else is on the highway. They said this driver is totally just going for it. Doesn't even notice anything. Well, says that, so the father, of course, is he said, so the dude, not the father, but the guy slams on the brakes, backs off the car, and then races up behind it again. Keeps tailgating this guy and his family. So you can only imagine, you know, look, this is. So the father goes on telling this story that he would say that the car would back off, like literally slam on his brakes, put some distance, and then floor it and race right up behind him again and then slam on the brakes, back up. The whole time this is going on, he's flashing his high beams off and on, off and on, off and on. But they can't pass. He said it's so windy and twisting that the father, just like the dude, won't pass, won't go around him. I guess because he can't, you know, he can't get around him. He's not sure. So the dad's like, I don't know what's going on with this guy, right? I'm freaking out. Right. I have no idea. They said if there was a shoulder, a safe way to get, the father always reports, you know, that I would have pulled off on the shoulder road, but he doesn't. Well, the story goes that this driver is getting more and more aggressive. He's honking. He's racing up right next to the car. Like, you can tell. So the father gasses it. The dad's like, enough of this. I'm going to get out of here too. Gasses it. Well, as he gasses it, the dude's just riding him now. Like, he's got what he wanted. Well, it goes in and it says the driver takes away that he ignores all the signs around him. He doesn't care if it's a double yellow. He doesn't care that there's a no passing sign, nothing. He whips over. He's going to pass the father, the mom, and the kid. So he floors it. The story says that there's a place called the Uwari Hills, I suppose is how it's pronounced. But the story goes that he pulls over there and he can't see what's on the other side of the hills. So that's where he chose to pass that evening. So he's trying to get around them. They don't know what the guy's behind him. The dude pulls over, floors it. A big panel truck comes over the top of the hill. Of course, by this time, you know, the guy's got it skint back. He's moving at this point. Big truck comes over. He's boxed in. The guy has nowhere to go. The family car's on his right. The truck's coming right at him. Everything to his left, you know, was all wooded. It's like, where am I going to go? Story says that the wife in the family car, the guy's wife, wakes up and she starts screaming that the Ford that's doing all that stuff goes hard left to not get hit by the truck, right? Not go head on. It doesn't right. pull towards uh-huh. them, goes hard left. Goes hard left. The truck still clips the back of the car, spins it out of control, rolls, throws it up into the trees, and it pretty much burst into flames. Massive car wreck at this point, right? It just stuck in the trees, massive car wreck. The driver, gone. They're like, the driver never comes out of this whole thing. That's the story that was laid down for the base work of this, where I'm going with this, because it wasn't much longer after that where this story starts popping up that people say that when they're driving at night, that they'll see a pair of headlights coming up behind them. And this is like current, okay? Current times, people have reported this. Headlights race up behind them late at night, follows real close a car. Same thing, flashing its lights, racing in and out, moving over in the left lane. Except this, they say that as it passes the car, goes around them, people will look over and notice that it's an old 1940s Ford sedan.
Wow.
So outside of a collector, who would possibly be doing this and why? Okay.
Right.
Why would anybody be having a little fun at someone else's expenses like this? Dangerously. This isn't something that's normal. But what's more amazing, they say, is that this part. Nobody ever reports seeing the guy behind the wheel. It is a ghost car. Like, they don't ever report seeing a dude driving. Just the car racing past him.
That's crazy.
So, you don't... And we've all heard these. We've even reported on some of these phantom sedans and or time slip vehicles. So, it seems to be another urban legend on a lonely stretch of highway that would be told simply as entertainment. But in the 1950s, in Ohio, some people around that time would beg to differ. This comes from the Times in Santa Mateo, California, from the 1st of January in 1952. It reports on the Phantom of Route 40. It says the Phantom of Route 40 roars down the highway in Ohio. The Phantom of Route 40 is roaring down the national highway these nights, maybe along a stretch you've traveled on. Roy Fitzwater, 30, a Greenville, Pennsylvania trucker, had this to say. It was spitting snow and freezing rain and a very dark one night 3 weeks ago. I dimmed my lights when a car approached. When the car got about 200 feet from me, its lights went entirely out. Then a little light flicked on inside, and I saw this thing. It was horrible looking. It scared me. I jammed down my throttle and got out of there fast. It reports that there were 5 tales of this ghostly traveler that made it all the way back to the state highway patrol there. It says that some truckers said that the Phantom's car glows and occasionally that the Phantom gets out and reveals a Halloween mask and a skeleton suit with bones outlined in luminous paint. Now, the truckers say that they've almost caught this guy about a week ago. Now, mind you, folks, this is in 52. Said, but he zoomed away, scraping his car against one of the trucks. They believe that maybe he's mentally ill, is what a patrol officer said. And some even went on to say that maybe he's just got a very strange sense of humor. Now, the Oregonian in Portland, Oregon, Oregonian, on the 8th of March in 1952, says this, that in Dayton, Ohio, on March 7th, a phantom skeleton is stalking truckers along the western Ohio stretches of U.S. Route 40. Truckers report actually seeing a masked motorist who wears a skeleton suit that glows in the dark. And for some time that they've been keeping their experiences to themselves, not wanting to draw a horse laugh from police. But they soon found more than one driver wasn't seeing things after conversations in the roadside, it says, eating spots, that the Phantom, according to these stories, likes to show up on the highway on stormy nights. And he's been at it since before Christmas, 1952, and almost was caught once when three truckers closed in at the Route 4 span over the Stillwater River, and that the Phantom's favorite trick is to approach a rolling truck from the opposite direction, dim his lights normally, then put them out completely. All lights go out about 150 to 200 feet from the surprised truck driver, who then sees a dim light come on inside the car, and the sight of the Phantom driver is described as horrible looking. This comes from the repository in Canton, Ohio, the 20th of March of 1952. St. Mary's, the Phantom of Route 40, a hard-driving spook who enjoys scaring truck drivers, popped out again today, this time behind a green smoke screen. Rex and Tom Weaver, brothers of St. Mary's, said that they've seen all they want of the garnishly clad ghost who appears like a will-o'-the-wisp on Western Ohio roads. The Weavers reported that they were driving on Route 40 near McCartyville when a car passed, then suddenly stopped in front of them. Rex had this to say, "We skidded to a stop and ran up to cuss out the fool who was driving the car. When we got there, the darn thing actually began to fill up with green smoke." He said there was a man inside the car with a wild-looking striped suit on. He began laughing like a maniac, then roared away in his car. So I ask you this. Were all these simply urban legends? Or was there really someone dressed up and just messing with truckers and travelers in that area? Was this, I guess, what trolling would be in the 1950s?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because as far as I can find, there's no definitive answers to this case, and no one was ever caught or really even tied to this tale. But this tale brings me to the state of Ohio, all right, and all the weird and strange tales, of course, that come from it. Now, this next one is going to come from the wonderful Miss Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and it's her research into the mystery running man of I-675 in Ohio. Now, for those unfamiliar with Miss Rosemary and, of course, and what she does, I'm going to elaborate on this. She's a leading expert and a best-selling author in the metaphysical and paranormal fields. Now, she's also published more than 60 books that covers ranges from metaphysical topics, spiritual, paranormal. She's got 9 single-volume encyclopedias. Her work's been translated into 15 different languages. Kyle and I have actually talked about the stuff in her work on the djinn and on shadow people. She started working and doing research into this field full-time in 1983. So you could say she's been around, all right? She knows what she's looking at. She's even been known to consult on cases of persistent negative hauntings. I mean, she's been in digging into these stories for years. She has a thing called Strange Dimensions Radio, and it airs on Wednesday nights on KGRA. All right? So our bud over there, Ohabo, our bud. But here's a strange tale I'm going to tell you about the Running Man. And
good movie, by the way.
It is a great movie. And it links in. I'm surprised they haven't remade that. And it links
back. They will.
Back
Give in, it enough time, they will.
Yeah, true. Because this, as y'all can tell, I'm bottlenecking down to where it starts as a broad brush of urban legend down to some things that are truly hard to describe and wrap your head around. And this is what she writes. In the summer of 2008, husband and wife, Diana and Ollie, had a startling experience with a faceless, handless man who suddenly appeared alongside their car as they pulled onto a freeway late at night. The experience lasted about a minute and forever changed their minds about the existence of paranormal phenomena and mysteries that defy explanation. At that time, the couple worked cleaning carpets, and one of their clients was Circuit City. One summer night, they wrapped up their work at a store in the Beaver Creek, Ohio area around midnight. They decided it was early enough to head home in Kent. They pulled onto Interstate 675 northbound at exit 17, and almost immediately, a violent thunderstorm hit. Rain slashed sideways across the pavement, and the sky lit up with lightning. Thunder crashed. The freeway was deserted. There were no vehicles in sight. The rain was so heavy that they decided to pull off at exit 20 and wait the storm out. After about 5 minutes, the rain let up enough for them to feel safe getting back on the road. Ollie eased into the right lane, and then something caught his side vision, and looking to his left, he was astonished to see a man wearing a gray hoodie running very close alongside the car, keeping an even pace with his side window. "Is that a man running on the road?" Ollie asked his wife in disbelief. Diana saw the figure too. It was no ordinary man, however, which chilled both of them to the bone. The hoodie only partially covered the running man's head, but no face was visible where a face should have been, especially considering the closeness of the figure. The space where a head and face should have been was empty and black. The man's arms pumped up and down as he ran effortlessly alongside the car, but no hands were visible. From their angle, Ollie and Diana could not see below the waist, and even stranger, the mystery man was not getting wet from the rain. The figure paid no attention to the couple or their car, as if they didn't even exist. Ollie sped up from about 10 miles an hour to 25 miles an hour. The man ran faster, but still smoothly and effortlessly, and kept an even pace with the car. She writes, "What human being can run 25 miles an hour without effort?" "Let's get out of here," Ollie said, and he floored the gas pedal and they roared off down the freeway. Said they did not look back and kept going until they got home, and that was the last time they saw the running man. So she writes that she was trying to figure this out. Did something have to do with the storm? Was it the thunderstorm? She said the explanation makes sense, as I would propose this myself. Violent storms with rain, thunder, and lightning and ionized air that results from them have long association with the manifestation of paranormal phenomena. Well, we start talking about some of these stuff raining on the nights where this girl in white dresses flag them down. Okay? This seems to be an ongoing thing. She also talks about that perhaps it was a parallel dimension, and what they're seeing is a part of the person that's running. Now, it says that he was not entirely of our dimension, as some of the details of the face and hands were not visible, and it was not raining in his dimension, so he wasn't getting wet. So she brings that up. Now, this is what Rosemary says, that she favors interdimensional explanation, but she says this, there's some odd things about it. Was the figure really a human man from a parallel dimension, or was it an entity in the shape-shifted guise of a man? Was it a trickster entity? Out to have some opportunistic fun with the couple out on a dark, lonely stretch of the highway. She even brings up the fact that the figure ran along the side of the car at 25 miles an hour. Usain Bolt runs just under 28 miles an hour in a 100-meter dash, okay? All-out sprint.
Yeah.
That's 100 meters. And this guy wasn't sprinting. He's just moving along beside them. She even writes here that scientists speculate that technically humans could run as fast as 40 miles an hour if they could significantly reduce the amount of contact time the foot has to spend on the ground. Yeah, well, good luck with that. Right? Here's something else she points out. I-675 is a 26.53-mile bypass of Dayton to the south and east and connects Interstate 70 and 75. And it passes right by Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. That's something out. So recently, she dropped this little old brain vitamin on all of us. And again, this comes from Ohio and yet again deals with the mysterious figure on the highway. She posted this on her website, folks, March 7th of 2017. The Phantom Hoodie Man. You ready for this? Of I-70.
Yeah.
Now, I just said it connects this, right? I-675 connects interstates I-70 and I-75. Recently, I met Chris Fortifer at an event in Dayton where I talked about the Phantom Running Man of I-675. What I've just discussed, a hooded figure, no face, hands, and the feet that ran along the side of the car. Chris had his own encounter with a similar figure on another road. Chris had been a subcontract driver for the United States Postal Service for the past 7 years, and he drives a semi-truck from Dayton, Ohio to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and back 4 nights a week hauling mail. He usually arrives in Pittsburgh around 10 p.m. and then gets back to Dayton around 3:30 a.m., and he uses I-70 through Ohio. For 7 years, nothing unusual has happened on that drive. He says that changed in May of 2015 when Chris encountered a phantom hoodie man standing on the side of the freeway and acting quite strangely. She writes that the incident occurred on an otherwise pleasant Sunday morning about 1 a.m. Traffic was light and there was no unusual weather, but it had been cloudy that night. Chris passed mile marker 140. About 10 miles west of Zanesville, traveling about 65 miles an hour. Suddenly, his headlights hit what appeared to be a man standing on the right shoulder of the freeway. With a shock, he realized the figure was floating off the ground. It had no feet. Now, this man, in quotes, was dressed in dark blue jeans, a dark brown hoodie embellished with yellow gold symbols that looked like a college fraternity Greek letters. It had no hands either. As he passed by, the figure raised its head as if to look back at him, but there was no face, just empty blackness. Even stranger was that the right shoulder of the figure was flipping back and forth at an incredible speed. Chris says that if you take your hand and flip it back and forth as fast as you can, it was even faster than that. My hand doesn't even go that quick. Not to mention how difficult it is to flip a shoulder. Now, another semi was behind Chris, and he jumped on his CB radio to ask the driver if he saw the figure too, but the driver said no. He saw nothing on the shoulder of the road. Now, Chris is a frequent experiencer, it says here, of paranormal, and had encountered some weird things throughout his life, but nothing like this faceless, vibrating hoodie man, and it completely unnerved him, so much that he had to call his best friend, it says, working on the night shift at a gas station just to tell him about it. And he says the reason being is because he needed to hear a calm, relaxed voice. Now, 2 weeks go by, and on the exact same run, at almost the exact same spot, Chris said he saw what appeared to be a shadow person stepping into the road. It had one arm raised, and he could see straight through the entity's mouth. Now, Rosemary says that she asked Chris if there was any possibility if the figure could have been a college frat student, you know, messing around, you know, just playing around. And this is what Chris says. There's no way that was a solid person standing up on the side of the road. It had no feet, no hands, and just darkness for its face. That it was very, very creepy. Now, perhaps the flipping shoulder, she says, was a symptom of something that was from another dimension and was not completely materialized into ours. She says, I have long thought that entities, aliens, and mysterious creatures and beings are interdimensional visitors. So, that's what I found, and that's what I want to talk about now with y'all right quick before we go into break. A real closing thing is to think about this. We start off with books, you know, written of an urban legends of these vanishing hitchhikers. Well, is it urban legend? Because there's a lot of stuff that goes into these sightings, like we've discussed, of storms, the white dresses, you're seeing these people. And I get a lot of this is overlap. Could it have been something that's overlapped? Could it have been something that there was a little bit of a strange sighting and then they took and ran with it? That's very, very possible. Mm-hmm. We all know how stories work and how stories grow. That's this whole thing. Or is always the best part. Or is it something that is truly interdimensional, like she talks about? Was it something that we saw, but like you and I have discussed multiple times before with the djinn? Was it an old wives' tale? Was it simply an urban legend? And we have put so much into it that we ourselves have caused it. You know, we've put and made it like a thought being, or you know what I'm saying is, yeah, like you focus as like a tulpa that we've created this, or maybe we've actually personally created these doorways that allow these things to come through that we see here, or much like we've discussed with Gettysburg, much like we've discussed just on this last Elite show. And I talked about with the amusement parks and things that people have seen there, much like that. does the highway truly have a memory? Is there an area there where there is a brutal accident? And the highway truly, I always think back to the old Red Sovine song, Phantom 309.
Right.
You know, and that's what it's all about. The old hitchhiker, and he gets picked up, you know, and Big Joe picks him up in the Phantom 309 18-wheeler, and then he drives and he tells him, I'm not going that way. I'm going to have to let you off here. And he gives him a dime, and he goes in to buy some coffee, and that's when everybody freaks out because Big Joe died 10 years ago. This whole thing, you know, listen to the story. It's an old country song. It's great. Don't listen to Teddy Bear that Red Sovine sings. It's so sad. But this is something that I can tell that's stuck in Americana. It's stuck in us. Like we've talked about apple pie and baseball here in America. This is something that's stuck in our history of these hitchhikers, people picking them up, people, you know, them vanishing in thin air. I think about another song, The Ride, written by David Allan Coe, about Hank Williams Sr., you know, him picking up the ghost of Hank Williams Sr. All of these things are something that is, it's caught up in our collective minds. And I know when you drive down the highway, because I've done it, especially late at night, you may think you see some stuff that's not really there. You're tired. You know, you and I have talked about it before when we've gone up into the mountains and, you know, I'm following you or you're following me and all, and it's just you and I are the only ones awake, two vehicles, and we're in the middle of nowhere. You know, and you start seeing things like, did I see those lights? Did I see on the side of the road? But also, in the same breath, you and I have covered multiple stories and had stories told to us about people having the same sightings and things like Rosemary covers, that doesn't explain it the same way. So I think throwing the baby out with the bathwater in these stories, you can't do. Yeah, that may be an urban legend with the woman that maybe you're picking her up and you're taking her home. That's not a real thing. But you can't explain the running man like that in Ohio. You can't explain this hooded man. And if it really is shadow beings or shadow creatures, what's the deal with the hoodies? And why is it the thing with the hoodies going to the black-eyed kid stuff that we've talked about? It seems to be, you know what it is because hoodies weren't a big clothing item until the last 20 years.
Yeah, that's true.
So is it something that we're used to seeing, or is it something that these evil entities have adopted because they blend in with it, or is it something we've projected? I don't know.
I do like to rock a hoodie.
I love a hoodie. We ought to have some made. We ought to get some show hoodies made. But this is just something that it caught me because I'm like, I see all what they're trying to say with the urban legend. But then you still have these other ones. And I think it goes back into the whole, all this stuff that I've covered always makes me think of Bigfoot. So many times people want to brush it off as, and I'm guilty. We're all guilty of it. No matter how much you believe, there's always that one story which you're like, this isn't real. This guy's telling the truth. This guy's a liar. And all that stuff. I think we've all been guilty of it, but we still have to sit back and look at it. It comes from somewhere, and not every story, even though they all sound alike sometimes, doesn't mean that they all are alike. Just like hamburgers. A hamburger is just a piece of meat, a piece of cheese, and two circle breads.
That's right.
Right? That's it. But if you had them from all different hamburger joints, they're all going to taste different.
They're all made time, for sure.
They're all made with the same basic ingredients, but they're all going to taste completely different. And that's what I think we got to keep in mind here. And that's the one thing I want to leave you guys with is that's why we always have to keep an open mind. I mean, Kyle and I, sometimes I know we're bad about it, where we shoot down our own stories. We talk about some stuff and we're like, but could that really be it? You have to have an open mind, but not so open your brain falls out, not so close that you're not willing to take anything, if that makes any sense. But I hope you enjoyed it. This is a little bit of the history of the Phantom Hitchhiker, or the Vanishing Hitchhiker, some highway phantoms, some strangeness of how it all ties in around the highway. Nobody got hurt. Nobody got killed. Nobody got truly scared. Although a dude running beside you at 25 miles an hour with no face was probably a little scary. So let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap this puppy up, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Very, very chilling stories if they are real.
And it makes you think. Anyway.
It does make you think. And you're quite right. Too often on this show, we read accounts and then we kind of, you know, start dismissing it as, well, that can't be real. I mean, that doesn't look like it. You know, like we always say, how do I know? Unless I was there, if I was in the car and I saw that, how can I truly say that they didn't see what they saw? I don't know. As far as a guy pulling a prank on truckers back in the 1950s, right? 1952, I think that's highly unlikely that somebody, you know, if you're a truck driver and you're on the road driving all the time, I think you'd be able to tell whether or not somebody was pulling a prank. And well, to me, for so many people to see the same thing is a little suspect.
Well, it makes me think of, I did know this, that there was a guy that actually, the way it came in, and I'm trying to remember when it was, but it actually took place in Kentucky. And I know it's been done before, but this fella had a Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, you know, he would sit in a little rumble seat in the back of it and had it set up where he could drive from the back and see, and had like a black divider built around him. And he put a plastic skeleton, but it was like a skeleton.
Oh, really?
In the front seat, and made it look like a skeleton was driving. And of course he got in trouble for it, but that's what it looked like because he's actually driving from the back. So you think about that. You could rig a car like that and make it do it.
Yeah, yes, you could. I never thought about that. I didn't even know that guy did that.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that, I mean, when you're talking about a dude chasing truckers around and doing that stuff, yeah, you could do it. I don't understand why you would do it unless you were a total crazy person. But all these truckers were interviewed. So that's another part of this whole thing is I'm like, there is real stories of this stuff happening that's been documented from people that's not just and like I've discussed with the others, there was real documentation of these people picking up hitchhikers and them vanishing in their cars. So it's like I said before, was it urban legend when we started this and we made it,
right?
You know, that we tulped it or whatnot, our psyche made it, or was it truly there and we tell ourselves it's urban legend because we don't want to be scared to death?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, I think, know I'm that way.
I think much like many things on this show is it's a little bit of both.
Yes, I agree.
You know, everybody wants a white and black, or they want a cut and dry answer.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, in the real world, I don't think you very rarely get that.
No, yeah, you're right.
I think it's all those things combined. Well, yes. Before we get out of here, let's talk about our sponsor, Gaia. That's G-A-I-A. Gaia is a video streaming service. Very cool. You know, recently, I got rid of my cable television again. I got it back because I was going to watch hockey games. And since my team didn't do too well, it's time to get rid of it again. So I got rid of it, and, you know, we have Apple TV. I know you have Apple TV mm-hmm. as well. And, you know, on that Apple TV, I have Netflix. I have Hulu. I pay a little extra so that there's no commercials on Hulu. I also pay a little extra so I get Showtime. And then I have HBO. And what I've learned is I'm not the only person that's doing this. Lots of people are getting rid of cable television mm-hmm. and going to these services that are standalone services. And you can watch them on your Roku or Apple TV or what's the Amazon Fire, mm-hmm. I think, is the television show. Television device over there. Well, Gaia is the same thing. Gaia is a video streaming service, just like Netflix, just like Hulu, just like HBO and all that. They have thousands of movies, documentaries, and classes on spiritualism, yoga, things like that. They have over 7,000 over there. Very interesting. I love it. There's not a night that goes by that I don't find something interesting to watch on Gaia. And I was just recently hanging out with a friend, Luke. And he was telling me that he signed up mm-hmm. for Gaia, and he loves it. And we were also hanging out with Logan. Logan mm-hmm. told me that he's got it, and he loves it. We were talking about what shows we like and stuff.
Let me guess. You like Deep Space.
Deep Space. That's both mine and his favorite. I love Deep Space. But there's a lot of other good shows over there, like Open Minds with Regina Meredith.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a new episode out right now called Lessons from Our Polarized Times with Belinda Womack. There's Truth Hunter with Linda Moulton Howe. And this new episode over there is detailing the government's alien taxonomy. There's Beyond Belief with George Norrie. If you're into ancient history, there's Hidden Origins with Michael Tellinger. There's Missing Links with Greg Braden. There's Advanced Ancient Technology with David Hatcher Childress. Forgotten Archaeology with Michael Cremo. There's Buzzsaw with Sean Stone, where they have very, very, very many interesting shows over there. I recently watched a few, like Symbols of the Masons. There's an episode called Esoteric Hollywood. There's even a two-part series called Caesar's Messiah with Joseph Atwill.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff is very interesting. The Shadow Government, The Rise of False Flags, and The Sound of Sacred Geometry. And there's so much more. There's even a show over there on that network called Cosmic Disclosure. Let's take a listen.
The German secret societies ran into a group of Nordic-looking beings that had existed for tens of thousands of years.
Yes, we have extraterrestrials here on the planet.
But the United States didn't want any of its people to know about the existence of extraterrestrials or higher technology.
Who are the Nordics? Who are these guys?
If they've kept this technology hidden for, you know, 80 years or whatever, why are they all of a sudden going to become all benevolent? That is a total manipulation.
Super cool, man. I love these shows. Like I said, Deep Space is my favorite. You need to go over to Gaia and sign up. You just go to GAIA.com/EP. and you can sign up. They have a couple different plans. They have a three-month plan. They have a monthly plan. And, of course, they have an annual plan. And if you sign up now for the monthly plan, your first month is only 99 cents. After that, it's $9.95. That's GAIA.com/EP. And by supporting our sponsors, you're supporting our show. Cam, we got some sad news. Anthony Johnson, yep. Rumble Johnson retired. And also Patrick Cote retired.
The Predator.
And so it's sad to see them go, especially more for me, Anthony, than Patrick. Patrick's been at it for a long time.
Yeah.
I can see why he wants to get out. But I would like to see Bo go a little longer. He's still a young man. But hey, you know, maybe who knows what's going on in his private life. Maybe he's got something better. Maybe he's going to settle down and be a father. Or
well,
maybe he's just
he
tired of training.
He had a commitment that had nothing to do with fighting.
Right. So
that he wanted to go and do. And that's like I told you and I was watching, you know, and had a few beers and we were talking and I said, you know, I don't know how those guys get up and do it day in and day out, especially if you make a run at the title and don't get it and you got to start back. It's just, I don't know, you know, and I think it's getting to that point now to where those guys give it a run, but they also think about quality of life.
I'm with you.
You know, and that's one of those things like, look, I love watching fights, but it takes it out of people. Same as, you know, any sport, but fighting is one of those ones you're like, dude, there's no good thing for the human body.
No, you're not meant to fight like that.
No.
Not at all. Well, if you have any stories of ghost and phantom hitchhikers of your own you'd like to share with the show or anything else interesting, you can always email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 817-945-3828. If you'd like to help the show out, please go on iTunes or Stitcher and write a review. That really helps us out. And also, if you can't get enough of Expanded Perspectives, don't forget there's another show called Expanded Perspectives Elite. This comes out every Friday. And if you sign up by going to the website, expandedperspectives.com, you can go over there. It's $5 a month. And for that $5, you'll get an additional episode every Friday, including access to the entire back catalog. So that's right. There are hundreds of episodes that you've never even heard before that are over there. So you like to if you're the type of person that likes to go binge watch television shows or binge watch episodes on podcasts, now's your chance. Go over there, expandedperspectives.com, and sign up for Elite. Cam, you got any big plans this week?
The grind. We got to get a bunch of stuff done before we cut out of here. So
the tax man.
The tax man is coming. Of that stuff going. Yeah, the whole deal. So yeah, and like Kyle said, folks, I think we're at like here in America anyway. 459 reviews or something like that. Let's make a push to 500, please.
For reals.
Please, we're begging y'all. Please. Let's try to hit 500. Please. We love y'all.
It helps
us
because when people search for new shows, as long as you keep getting new reviews, especially good ones, it leads traffic to us. So that really helps us out.
Yes.
You know, we don't have a Patreon or anything like that. If you want to help us out, man, just write us a good review. That's what really helps.
Support our sponsors and write reviews. That's all we got. That's all we ask.
That's right. So for you Elite members, we'll be speaking to you on Thursday. For everybody else, we'll be talking again next Monday. For Pretty Lights, Gaia, Phantoms and Monsters, Inner Tradition Books, New Page Books, Llewellyn Books, Anomalous Books, and Ancient American Magazine, I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.
Bye.